So does God reside near a star called Kolob or not?
I don't know.
Pearl of Great Price, pages 34, 35 teaches that.
Right.
So you must. He doesn't live here in this world. He lives on another planet. So that would mean your God's an alien from another world.
No.
Well, isn't an alien a life form from another planet?
Yes.
Okay, I'll just check it. Now, I think that because you deny the Trinity, I think you are a heretic. And when I say these, I don't mean to be insulting, okay? But I think you're a heretic. I don't believe you're a Christian. Because you deny the Trinity, you're in serious trouble.
They're two separate.
They are. Could you put your hand in front of your face?
Yeah.
Okay? And get it vertical. So your right hand is in front of your face. So your palm is facing to your left. Look to your left and slap yourself upside the head.
Why?
Because you're being foolish.
No, I'm agreeing with the Bible.
No,
the Bible,
you are not.
If a supreme being did exist, it would be this being's responsibility to make sure that I knew this being was there.
Why?
Because he created me. That's his responsibility.
Who said?
My common sense.
What your common sense is how God should be.
Exactly.
Oh, boy.
Hey, we are on the air. Hey, folks, I here I am in the studio. Got caught off guard talking to Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson. They're both from MRM, Mormonism Research Ministry. So we're just talking about the old, good old days and good stuff and some other things. And then all of a sudden, hey, we're on. So, hey, folks, this is Faith and Reason Radio. I'm your host, Matt Slick. And we're going to talk about Mormonism tonight because you guys are like, you know, I've heard you know a few things.
No. We're
okay.
Here to make you look good, Matt.
Oh, man, that's going to take a lot of work. But, hey, before we get into this, I got to make a clarification of something, folks. Now, we are going to have open calls. Let me get the number out. You can call if you want to call. It's 877-207-2276. Now, last night we had a caller, this young guy who was struggling with his faith, and then someone else called up and said that he wasn't a believer because he's struggling with his faith. And I just want to rebuke that. It is okay. To be alive, to be human, and to make mistakes. Now, God wants us to trust Him, and that's the issue. People do have their various struggles. They do have their various things that they have to work on. And if you are doubting your faith, you know what? Call the show up. You know, Bill and Eric are going to be in the studio tonight and tomorrow night. We talk about Mormonism. But, you know, call back Thursday, Friday, and we can talk about this issue because we need to know that our faith and our hope are in the person of Jesus Christ. And that he does grant us assurance at the time that he chooses. After we've struggled, after we've learned, and after we've been stripped down enough to trust in him no matter what. And that's what it takes sometimes. I just want to say that. All right, so, hey guys, thanks for driving up from Salt Lake.
Good to be here, man. It's always good to see you.
It is?
Yeah.
That's not what you said last time.
Yeah, oh, yes, I did. Come on.
Now, Bill and I, how long have we known each other? What, 15 years?
It's been a long time.
Right? Too long?
No, not really.
Yeah, don't you owe me a lunch?
We're going to go there, huh? Forgot your wallet again?
Yeah. Right. One time I owed Bill a lunch down in San Diego, so I call him up and, hey, Bill, I owe you a lunch. I'm going to go down and buy a lunch. And so we're sitting there talking about whatever, and then I go to pay, and I'd forgotten my wallet. And I knew as soon as I realized that my wallet was gone, for the rest of our friendship, you are going to be reminding me about
that's,
that.
That's what friends are for.
That's what friends are for. So
that's right.
I got to buy Eric lunch sometime. We'll see
hey, that. I look forward to it.
Don't trust him.
I won't have my wallet either. Then we'll have to wash dishes.
Yeah, that's right. Well, hey, why don't you guys tell us, tell everybody what you guys do, you know,
okay.
And your website. Just fill us in.
Yeah, well, Mormonism Research Ministry has been around since 1979, and we've been dealing with the issues of the LDS Church and comparing the doctrines of Mormonism to that of what the New Testament has to say about who God is, Godhead, salvation, things like that, the hereafter, Scripture. And Eric, who has worked with MRM since, what, late 1980s, we were on the air on KPRZ down in San Diego for 5 years. And had loads of fun doing a talk show down there called Viewpoint on Mormonism, and we're actually thinking about doing something very similar in Salt Lake City here pretty soon.
Really?
So kind of getting back into it because radio is so much better than television. I hate TV. So
well, you know, you got a face for radio, right?
Exactly.
That's how
exactly,
it works.
You know? But Eric's made the move up to Salt Lake City. And
when did you come up? A couple months ago?
Right? I came in June. And, June. You know, it's one of those things I've been looking at for the past 5 years. And I have young children, and so I think they're old enough now to be able to come to a place where yesterday my daughter, first day in school, three of her five teachers made it a big point in her school in near Salt Lake City that they were LDS returned missionaries. And she thought probably everybody here is LDS, and so it's going to be a whole new thing for them. So moving my family here and trying to get them situated is something that we've been emphasizing a lot, though. But I'm really happy to be here with Bill, and there's so much work that we have going on. I'm excited to be a part of it.
Well, you guys have done a lot of good work. I mean, I've learned a lot from you guys. You know, you're always the go-to guys, and when I have questions about Mormonism, you know, I know it pretty well, but you guys are the ones that kind of set the standard, yep. I guess you could say.
Well, Eric brings a lot to the table, and it's what's great about this is I've really needed somebody to kind of come in as an assistant for me and doing it all myself. There's just – I don't have the talent nor the time to do a lot of the things that I would love to see get knocked out. And so with Eric coming up here, we can get a lot of that under the belt. And
so you'd be working full-time with them, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. And so working with churches, trying to get the message out to the local church as to what Mormonism is so their congregations can be better prepared to be able to talk to their Mormon friends and family. And we're working together on a book. We're talking about this radio show. We're talking – there's a whole bunch. There's a whole list of things that one person, as you know, when you're by yourself, you just can't do everything because you've got – the financials, you've got to take care of correspondence and email and everything else. And so for years, Bill's been begging me to come, and so finally we were able to make that. I think it was a calling from God, and everything came together for us to be here.
Yeah, we're actually working on what we call a Compassionate Boldness Symposium. For a couple of years in Salt Lake City, we did the Compassionate Boldness Conference, where we brought in different speakers, and a lot of them local speakers, local pastors, local counter-cult ministry people, parachurch people, and we've kind of changed directions on that, and so Eric and I actually do team teaching in this. It's a four-hour presentation, and a church can have it in-house. And so we will come to them, and we put this thing on usually on a Saturday or maybe a Sunday afternoon, and basically just educate the people that, you know, want to come out and, you know, respond to a lot of the proof texts that Mormons will use that they think supports their views, look a little bit into what the Book of Mormon is really all about, what is the Mormon view of God, the Godhead, things like that, some of the basics. But also we want to give material to them, information to them that they can use it in an actual scenario, an actual situation. It's one thing to know about the history and some of the theology of Mormonism, but how do you put that into practice? How can you use it in a positive way? For instance, when talking over the fence with your Mormon neighbor, how do you get a conversation started and things like that? So hopefully these symposiums will be a big help in that. And we're already working on a couple of them now in the Salt Lake area. We've got one coming up in October 9th, and so we're pretty pumped about it.
Well, could we promote it here on Matt's show since, you know, we'll use his show up as much as we can. But
absolutely.
But if there's any pastor out there who says, you know, boy, that would be cool to have them come for 4 hours on a Saturday morning perhaps and to be able to do that, would they call us at our ministry? I can give them the website. MRM.org is our ministry website. If they go on there, they can get a hold of us, but we're willing to travel, and we're going to go all over. We want to do Idaho and Utah and Montana, Nevada, all the states around, because it's not just Utah, but we are in the center where things are happening. But we definitely have a message to proclaim, and I'm really excited about the book that we're working on. This is a revision of Bill's 1991 book called Answering Mormon's Questions, and we are in the process right now of working on that. And we're not sure how we're going to publish it, but we are excited for that as well, because one of the things that our ministry is all about, certainly we are here to share the faith with LDS. That's very important to us. But to inform the church, that is a huge responsibility we take upon ourselves, because more than half of all the Mormon converts come from a Christian background. And it's a shame for any church to lose somebody to this organization. And so having us come in, we've done this before, and Mormons have come as well. And they may not like exactly what we're saying, but they can't disagree with the information we're providing, that Mormonism is a completely different religion than the historic Christian faith.
That's for sure. Now, speaking of symposiums and stuff, now tomorrow night, you guys are going to join me.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm just
going to
introduce you. Yeah, I'm going to introduce you guys tomorrow. I'm going to sit down and just heckle you.
Okay.
But I've been teaching a class on Wednesdays on Mormonism, having PowerPoint slides and some other stuff. And So I've got you guys down here. It's going to be great. So, folks, any of you out there here in the Boise area, today is August 24th. So tomorrow, the 25th, at 7 p.m. in Nampa, Bill and Eric are going to be at New Heart Church. New Heart Church. And if you want to go and you can attend, it's free. It's at 7 p.m. All you got to do is take the 84 freeway out to exit 36 and go north about three-quarters of a mile. On the left is New Heart Church. I'll be there, and these gentlemen are going to be there, and they're just going to, like I said, I'm going to introduce them and just let them do their thing because they really are very good at it. They both are experts at Mormonism, very compassionate. If you have Mormon friends, you have questions about Mormonism, feel free. Just come on in, check it out, okay? Oh, and also, you're going to have this there with them.
Yeah, right? I'll have some of those available.
Yeah, we'll have a book table there, and including what Eric's recent project is the Apologetic Study Bible. So,
and I wish I, I've been wanting to do one of these myself.
Yeah,
I mean, but this I'm holding it in my hand. It's a Bible with study notes.
Yeah, it has more than that. This is a Bible. Sean McDowell, my friend, who is a Bible department head down in San Juan Capistrano, is the editor of it, and there were 46 others of us who joined him.
Oh.
And so we basically put this together, and I had a section called Twisted Scripture, and those are 50 of the most common scriptures that are misused by the cults. And so a little paragraph next to the passage itself, like Acts 2:38, mm-hmm. is baptism necessary for mm-hmm. justification? And I explain in a paragraph. It's kind of hard to do in 100 words,
right.
But to explain why that's not necessarily so. And so that mm-hmm. Bible has 130 or 140 different articles on everything from euthanasia to homosexuality to, I mean, those kinds of issues that college students are asking. It's called the Apologetic Study Bible for Students, and it's published by Holman, and it's a solid piece. They have an adult version of the Bible. This is just came out back in February. This is made more for students, and it's really easy, I think, for people to understand. We've written it so a 13-year-old could understand it, but it would be applicable for a 25-year-old.
Good stuff. Look at this, John 1:1. The word, the title for Jesus as a communication, the revealer of God the Father. Okay, other punctuation is possible. Not one good. It sounds. I'm just seeing if a 13-year-old could get it.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you can explain it to me later. Okay. Hey, folks, look out. If you have any questions at all about Mormonism, it'll be tonight's topic and tomorrow night's topic. Just feel free to call us up. Okay. But if you're just enjoying us banter a little bit, that's fine too. Okay, now, we talked about what we're going to talk about while we're driving here to the station,
mm-hmm.
and Glenn Beck. You want to talk about Glenn Beck a little bit?
Glenn Beck is a hot subject right now. I think probably the majority of the topics of the email that I'm receiving lately and also the phone calls that I'm receiving has to do with Glenn Beck. And there's no secret. He is a member of the LDS Church. He joined the Mormon Church back in 1999. So he's a relatively new convert to this. Been in about 11 years. He's rather a kind of an enigma because he talks about getting America back to God. And if you've ever seen his show, he's very conservative politically. So that resonates with a lot of Christians because many Christians are very conservative politically. And when he talks about God, of course, that resonates with a lot of Christians as well. But, of course, he's very vague as to who this God really is. Now, him being Latter-day Saint, we can only surmise if he is a faithful Mormon that he holds to some views of the Godhead that certainly we would not adhere to as Trinitarian Christians, that's for sure. But he says some things that sometimes I have to admit when I'm listening to him, he kind of throws me off. I remember one day I had his show on it kind of like in background, you know, like a background sound, you know, on, mm-hmm. you know, working on the computer. And I happened to look up at the television and I saw in black and white letters, you know, saved by grace. And I went, what's this all about? Turn up the sound. And he's talking about salvation. And he was basically on that day, he was making a comparison between what he said Christianity teaches regarding salvation and what black liberation theology teaches regarding salvation. And it was interesting because I started listening to what he has to say, and this is what he says, Matt. He said, you cannot earn your way into heaven. You can't. There is no deed, no random act of kindness, no amount of money to spread around to others that earns you a trip to heaven. It can't happen. It's earned by God's grace alone. By believing that Jesus died on the cross for you. This is what Christians believe. Now, hearing this come out of the lips of a Latter-day Saint, I'm sure would probably confuse a lot of people, but it certainly intrigued me because in talking to Latter-day Saints as I have for over three decades, you don't often hear Mormons talk about being saved by grace alone. In fact, Mormon leaders have been very clear that you're not saved by grace alone.
Well, let me ask you, just because I'm a little bit nitpicky when it comes to terminology and stuff
like
that.
Okay, good. We need to talk about that because I know where you're going with that.
Okay, because grace alone is different than faith alone because, you know, Roman Catholics, as an example, will say they're saved by grace alone, but it's the grace of God that enables them to have good works, but not by faith alone, they'll say.
Yeah.
So,
well, when he's talking about this, normally when a Mormon talks about being saved by grace alone, it usually is a reference to immortality. And what that means is that everybody is going to be saved by grace, in that everybody is going to have some kind of opportunity to get into one of the three levels of Mormon heaven known as the 3 degrees of glory, the celestial, terrestrial, or telestial kingdom. And Mormon leaders have been very clear that resurrection from the dead is being saved by grace alone. Now, I've never heard Beck give an explanation like that. I'm going to try as hard as I can to give him the benefit of the doubt because he actually talked about on this particular show, this was July 13th, so it wasn't that long ago, where he actually calls up and he talks to Richard Land from the Southern Baptist Convention and apparently explaining to Richard Land what he believes regarding salvation. And though he never came right out and said, well, you know, Richard put his, you know, stamp of approval on everything I'm saying, he gave the impression that Land did agree with him in what he was saying, that that was orthodoxy. What struck me was, why didn't Glenn Beck call his own Mormon leaders? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure Glenn Beck, having the name that he has, he could probably get a direct connection to, you know, Boyd Packer or somebody like that.
No, but he's probably trying to sound more evangelical.
Well, yeah. And if we want to all of a sudden believe that there's a great conspiracy, I can see, you know, why some suspicions might come up. And certainly, I think you would agree, Eric would agree, I would agree that over the many years that we've dealt with Latter-day Saints, that many times we find that they try very hard to just, you know, talk about similarities rather than really dwelling on the things that are unique and that separate them from the rest of us that claim to be Christians. Again, I don't get that at this time with Glenn, so I don't know where he is. I would love to have lunch with him, and if he happens to be listening, the invitation is over. I'll even buy. He can pick the restaurant. You know, I would just love to have an hour with him to just talk to him and ask him some other pertinent questions, because even though he may say things here that cause us to be encouraged, I'm not trying to imply that Glenn Beck certainly has orthodoxy regarding the one in whom he's trusting. Because Glenn Beck has been very vague, I think, when it comes to the God that he's serving. I've not heard him clearly explain who the God Glenn Beck believes in really is. Now, if he's really trusting in a God who was once a man, who became God at a particular point in time, who, you know, went through the same kind of earthly process that we're going through, which implies that he was also a sinner, which I have definite problems with. Or if he's trusting in a Jesus also, who's a spirit brother of Lucifer, who became God in the pre-existence and things like that, then definitely I say, you know, you might have your soteriology correct, but if it's in trusting in a false God, then it really does you no good anyway.
Right.
I mean, we might share names and things like that, but that's as far as it goes.
Bill, look at that quote again you read, and it said, "It's earned by God's grace alone by believing that Jesus died on the cross for you. This is what Christians believe." Now, I agree with him if on the surface what he's saying there are the words. If I were to read that in an evangelical book, I would understand. But the problem is in Mormonism, they have the same language we do.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The terms are the same, but the meanings are different. I'm thinking of 2 Nephi 25:23 that says we were saved by grace after all we can do. And so just the very idea of salvation for them, and also when he says heaven, I don't think he's given a clear identification of the Mormon heaven. Now, again, we can't delve too deep into his theology because we have nothing to go off of.
Right.
But, I mean, in Mormonism, they do teach that we're saved by God's grace into one of the three levels of heaven.
Salvation, resurrection, you mean?
Resurrection is available to all people through the atonement of Jesus Christ. What's interesting is, you know, when we're talking about how Jesus did this, how the atonement took place, I mean, the atonement for the Mormon is more based on the Garden of Gethsemane than it is on the cross of Calvary.
Well, that's why when you hear him say things like, by believing that Jesus died on the cross for you, That's not normally Mormon language. It's not normal. You're absolutely right. Gethsemane always gets the prominence when it comes to Mormon soteriology. If you look at most LDS church manuals, whenever they talk about the atonement or anything like that, it usually always is accompanied with a picture of him praying in the garden. Very rarely, it's not that they have never done this, but very rarely do you see a picture of the crucifixion.
Well, could you clarify for our listeners, a lot of new listeners, we're doing a new hour now, a lot of people don't know what the Mormon view of the atoning work of Christ is, you know, because biblically speaking, he bore our sins in his body on the cross, 1 Peter 2:24. Mm. But that's not really the issue what Mormonism was getting at.
Well, they would say that he bore the sins in Gethsemane. And this is what's confusing, because you don't find this teaching in the Book of Mormon, for instance. The Book of Mormon actually teaches an atonement that is in relative to the cross. If the Nephites, who are mentioned in the Book of Mormon, are actually real people, they wouldn't understand what a garden atonement was all about, because, for one, the garden is never mentioned in the Book of Mormon. It shouldn't be, really, because the Nephite and Lamanite people were separated by an ocean, okay, so they wouldn't have known this kind of stuff to begin with, but they certainly don't get that kind of an impression at all. It makes you wonder, well, how would they know about the cross, okay, because the cross is mentioned in the Book of Mormon. So it becomes very confusing. But looking backwards, it makes perfect sense, okay? It makes sense that somebody could be writing the Book of Mormon looking backwards and inserting all these kind of things. But would it really make a lot of sense if that was really an actual historical book?
Let me give you a quote on Gethsemane we're talking about. And in Gospel Fundamentals, it's a church manual from 2002 on page 57. This is what it says. In Gethsemane, Jesus suffered for the sins of all mankind as if they were his own. His suffering for all these sins were greater than any of us can understand. Then it goes on and it says, on the cross he finished suffering the penalty for Adam's disobedience and for our own sins. And Bill, we were talking about this on the way down here today.
We were, yeah.
What percentage was done at Gethsemane? What percentage was done on the cross? Well, if you read most of the writings that we have seen, it seems like most of the work was done at Gethsemane and it was finished at the cross. So they'll certainly talk about the cross, but for them the cross is anathema. They don't have a cross on their at their chapels. They don't wear crosses because they feel it's why would you want to wear a cross that if Jesus died by a bullet, would you wear a bullet around your neck? And this is what Paul talked about in Corinthians, that the preaching of the cross would be foolishness. And the cross is a very sacred symbol for us because of what happened there and the atonement that did take place.
Exactly. And when Christians, for instance, when we were out at Manti recently, Aaron Shafawala, who works with us at MRM, took with him a makeshift cross. You saw him out there.
Yeah.
And, oh, my goodness, that's like putting a red ant in a black ant hill pile, you know. It's just, wow. The way the Mormons reacted was just incredible.
They gathered.
Yeah, it certainly got their attention. But, you know, it's funny about that, and I mean funny in an odd type of way, is that Gordon Hinckley, when he was the president of the church.
Gordon Hinckley?
Gordon Hinckley was the president of the church a few years ago before he passed away, talked about that. And he used to always have a pat answer that, well, the reason why we don't look to the cross is because we want to talk about a living Christ, you know, not a dead Christ. Mm. And I'm thinking, you know what, that is such a shallow, shallow answer. I mean, it's not like the Mormons don't, you know, aren't reminded of the death. They take the sacrament, you know, in their services. What does that have to do with it? Of course, the death, you know. So I thought his answer was really kind of lame, but it's one that a lot of Mormons parrot over and over and over again, little realizing that you can't have a resurrection without a death. And we find also in the New Testament how Paul is constantly pointing to the cross, you know, not the garden. He never points to the garden. It's always to the cross.
Right.
The preaching of the cross is to them that perish foolishness, but unto us which are saved, it's the power of God. So, again, the Mormons might want to assume that we are somehow worshiping the symbol, but of course that's not true, and it's been said over and over again. If they want to just keep ignoring what we're saying, I guess that's their business, but it certainly is a sacred symbol to us. There's no doubt.
But Gethsemane, there's nothing in the Bible that points to that as being the place where Jesus took the sins. I mean, I can just give a couple other quotes here. Encyclopedia of Mormonism, Volume 3, page 1090 says, in Gethsemane, Christ took upon himself the burden of the sins of the world and suffered for them in a way that is incomprehensible to mortals. A guy that we have seen a lot, Robert Millett, is a BYU professor, said this: the difference for Latter-day Saints is their belief that the Savior's suffering in Gethsemane was not just a prelude to the atonement, but a vital and important part of it. I mean, over and over, Matt, we see the atonement in Christianity, that Jesus paid it all on the cross for our sins, that it's our belief in him that is, as it's just been said by a very famous and very well-respected radio and TV commentator who happens to be Mormon. I think a lot of people are probably getting confused by this because they've heard he's Mormon, perhaps, and they say, but how is that any different than what we as Christians believe? And I think that's a problem, because I think we need to differentiate. One of the things we've seen in the last 20 to 30 years is more and more Mormons want to be known as Christian, and the problem is that's confusing a lot of valid Christians who say, well, what's the big deal?
And Mormons. Well, I've talked to Mormons who don't even know their own theology. They've been Mormons for 2, 3, 4 years.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty
and there's no doubt that Beck has been covertly, if you will, inserting Mormon views. And in watching some of his shows recently, I think, in fact, Eric and I watched one of them together, and I was saying, you know, he is starting to step on some very controversial ground, even within the Mormon church. Beck seems to hold what we would call like more of a hemispheric model, or at least the North American setting for the Book of Mormon lands. He holds more to a Mormon guy by the name of Rod Meldrum, who has been a very controversial figure in the Mormon church, mainly with the boys at BYU. Brigham Young University, which is a LDS church-owned school, holds primarily to what they call the limited geography theory, that the Book of Mormon lands were really in a smaller area down in Central America. But Beck has been espousing some things that shows that he does not hold to that, or at least he's confused as to what the issues are. And I think what's going to happen, if he keeps going with this North American setting for the Book of Mormon, which BYU, the professors, I would say the great majority of them probably, at least that voice their opinion on it, do not hold, he's going to start catching flack from his own people. And so what he's been doing is he's been quoting some websites on his show that are highly controversial, but he's espousing them as if it's like a slam dunk. He talked recently about the Back Creek Stone, which was a rock that was found in the late 19th century in Tennessee that some argue have Hebrew writing on it, showing that the Hebrews, the Jews, were over in America a long, long time ago. And he makes it sound like, well, this is a slam dunk. You know, these Indians were much more advanced than we think. And he goes on and on. But little does a lot of people know that the stuff he's quoting is highly suspect. It's very controversial. There have been experts that have been strong opponents of these positions and say
LDS
that
LDS experts.
Well, not so much. Well, yes and no. Let me say this. There's an apologetic organization called FAIR, and even
what does FAIR stand for? Frustrated Anti
Foundation for Apologetics Information something or other. Yeah. But anyway,
information
but
research.
But it's a very pro-Mormon organization, and even they. And I have to give FAIR credit on this. They actually have an article on their site where they. I think it was titled Too Good to Be True, where they talk about a lot of these so-called archaeological finds that tend to support the Mormon view. But even they are critical and cautious about these things, saying, no, it really doesn't support. And this guy in this article actually says, look, if we want proof of the Book of Mormon, we don't need to make it up. We don't have to look at junk science or anything like that. I give him credit for that. But see, Beck has been touting some of these things as if, wait, there's no question about this. It's just that there's some conspiracy to hide the information. Now, the information's been out there. It's just you have to know where to look to find it, of course. So I would caution people to be very careful. Glenn Beck gets a lot of his marching orders, if you will, from the dead, from a guy named Cleon Skousen. He talks about – he actually wrote the foreword to a reprint of Skousen's book. Was it 5,000-Year Leap or something like that? And immediately this book sales just went skyrocketing on Amazon. Well, Skousen was kind of an interesting character too. He died several years ago. But he was the head of the Freeman Institute, or the Center for Constitutional Studies. And Skousen had some really strange theological views about how the intelligences, before they became, you know, spirit children of God, had the ability to kick God out if he was to do anything that violated their trust and things like that. And he bases that on the Book of Mormon. But anyway, Skousen was a very strong conservative, and Beck really makes, you know, he doesn't hide the fact that this guy has been a big influence in his political views.
Well, Bill, I think you ought to talk, too, about how Beck's conservative viewpoint really doesn't fit in with Mormonism's socialism, you know, especially with early Mormonism. Why don't you tell him a little bit about that?
Well, see, that's something that really strikes me as odd because, you know, Glenn Beck is certainly an enemy of socialism. He talks about that a lot, and it is a concern for many Americans because it just isn't part of our makeup. And so Beck is sounding an alarm that, you know, our country, he feels, is going in the wrong direction regarding that. But, and it makes me wonder, does he not realize that Joseph Smith really was the token socialist of his time? I mean, he brought into play some theology that Mormons don't follow today. And the reason they don't follow is because it just didn't work. I mean, he brought in what's known as the law of consecration or the United Order, where members coming into the Mormon church had to, you know, give, you know, consecrate their property over to the church. And then it was kind of used in a socialistic manner to help out everybody that, you know, was hurting and things like that. But you read some things about this, how, let's say you consecrate your stuff to the church, but then if you found out the church wasn't true and you wanted to leave, well, do you get to take your stuff back? No. And so this becomes highly controversial. It makes me wonder, does Beck know his own church's history? Because he touts himself as one who encourages people to study these things, and that's great. But it makes me wonder, has he really done an appropriate amount of time studying his own church movement in the early years? Now, granted, the law of consecration, the United Order, did not work. When Brigham Young went out west to Salt Lake Valley, he started colonies around Utah and southern Utah and such, where they were supposed to reinstate the United Order. There's even a town called Orderville that was kind of named after this, and it didn't work. And so what ultimately happened is it was abandoned because socialism is a stupid system. It doesn't work. It just doesn't
maybe
work.
Maybe you should talk, you know, to some of the people in Congress and the Senate.
Oh, I'd love to have an hour with each of them. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. You know, but you know, they're so much smarter than all of us, Matt. You know,
they wouldn't listen to us little voters.
But Bill, this still doesn't work today because there's a church in Manti, Utah, called the True and Living Church, mm-hmm. And it is a fundamentalist church, polygamous, led by a guy named Jim Harmston.
So it's an offshoot of Mormon.
It is an offshoot. They're not a Mormon church, but they do believe in Joseph Smith, Brigham Young, all the way up until the time of polygamy was abandoned in 1890, and they have this, and there have been a number of people who have joined this church who have done what Joseph Smith's religion has said, to give up all their money. Brigham Young is the one who made that popular, and then when they left, they had nothing. And legally, when you give your money over to a religious organization, there's really no way to get it back, and so it caused all kinds of problems. And once they have your money, they can do whatever they want with you, and they say, yeah, we'll provide you with a job, but nothing to get you ahead in life.
Right.
Look at Russia. I mean, the Soviet Union is a prime example of how
Europe.
Social.
Becoming the United Socialist States of America.
Well, I think this needs to be emphasized because this is a real big issue, and what makes Mormonism's law of consecration actually unique is how Joseph Smith claimed this was a law from God. Let me read you a quotation. This is from Richard Van Wagner, who's a Mormon historian. In 1985, he wrote an article for Dialogue, a journal of Mormon thought. And Dialogue has a pretty good history of writing some very thought-provoking articles dealing with Mormon history and such. Now, some, you know, TBMs, the True Believing Mormon, might not like some of the conclusions, but I find that they're usually pretty honest in how they report things and what they write on. But Van Wagner, who's written numerous books, he wrote an excellent book on polygamy in Mormonism.
Classic.
Which I use all the time. I mean, he's got some great stuff in there. But this is what he said in this article. He said, After arriving in Ohio from New York in early February 1831, Joseph Smith convinced Rigdon's communal group, now Rigdon is Sidney Rigdon, who would convert from being a Campbellite with Alexander Campbell, he would convert from that and join the Mormons and really become Joseph Smith's right-hand man for several years in the early years of the church. He convinces Rigdon's communal group to abandon the common stock principle in favor of the more perfect law of the Lord. And that phrase is in quotations. A week later, on the 9th of February, 1831, Smith announced God's revealed law of consecration and stewardship. Members were advised that all things belong to the Lord and were directed to deed all personal property to the bishop of the church. The bishop then returned a stewardship to each head of a household who was expected to turn over any accrued surplus to the church. Known as the Order of Enoch, the Lord's Law, and the United Order, the Mormon Order of Stewardship was intended as a pattern of social and economic reorganization for all mankind. Now, does Beck know this? Because what makes this especially offensive, I would think, to a person like him is Smith is claiming God instituted this. Mm-hmm. This isn't just some liberal politician who's come up with socialistic ideas. He's blaming God for this. Now, it didn't work, and it had to be abandoned for the law of tithing. But as you can see from this statement, and Wagner is a faithful Mormon. He's not an enemy of the church by any stretch of the imagination.
I want to make it clear: we like Beck. We like his politics for the most part. I mean, we would say we're Beck fans, but I don't think, as a recent convert, I don't think he knows this. I don't think he knows a lot of things. When he said the things
but
he said
should.
About salvation. Yeah, but
I think we agree he should, because if he's going to tout himself as an erudite person who reads a lot about this, he should know this stuff.
We invited Glenn Beck. You sent him a book when you printed your book.
I sent him a copy of In Their Own Words, and which is just a collection of quotations arranged topically. And I didn't put any commentary in it.
You can have that tomorrow night at the church, because I want to plug the church then and stuff again. Now, folks, you're listening to Faith and Reason Radio. We have Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson in the studio with me here. They are from Mormonism Research Ministry, MRM.org. They're Mormon experts. And tomorrow night, just another plug, if you are interested, if anybody's interested, they're going to be speaking at New Heart Community Fellowship, what we just call New Heart Church for short, kind of. And it'll be off of the 84 Freeway, Exit 36, just go north about three-quarters of a mile. New Heart Church is good enough there. And we'll be there at 7 p.m. Normally, I teach on Wednesdays there, and you guys are going to be in there teaching. Now, what are you going to – do you have notes you can talk about tomorrow night?
Well, you kind of asked us just to field questions.
Yeah,
and
whatever you want to do.
Doing a Q&A, and we could do that. We're open to doing just about anything.
Can I heckle you?
Of course.
You would anyway, so why would you ask?
A lot of forehead slapping and they like, "Dole!" And,
they want to come just for that.
Yeah. Oh, it'd be fun. Watch this banter.
Yeah, well, if people have some questions, and we'll try very hard to fit our answers to fit the appropriate question. But we'd be glad to do that. If people are talking with their Mormon friends and kind of want some advice on what do I bring up, what do I not bring up, how do I approach the subject, we can talk about just about anything. But
okay, so that'll be tomorrow night at 7 p.m., folks. We're going to do another radio show tomorrow night, and it's just drive from here to there. Mm-hmm. And that'll be off of Exit 36. So, folks, it's easy to remember. 6 times 6 is 36. Exit 36 in Nampa, off of the 84 Freeway. Go north. Three-quarters of a mile, and there you'll find New Heart Church, and we'll be starting at 7 p.m. Okay. Now, back to Glenn Beck.
Okay.
Have you tried contacting him?
I mean, the only thing I ever did is I tried contacting his publicist and just sent him a copy of the book. I put a little note in the front saying, "Hey, if you're ever in Salt Lake, let's get together."
But he and I were talking yesterday. I mentioned him.
Yeah.
Mentioned
you. Yeah, right. I'm not expecting him to do that. But
if we, we would be very nice and just for an hour. And
it'd only be nice for an hour, then what?
No, then we'd become really mean.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But no, I mean.
I'll tell you what. I would be a lot nicer to him than what some Mormons have been.
Oh, yeah.
I tell you, there have been some Mormons, more of a liberal persuasion politically, but still defend the Mormon church. You can't stand back. In fact, I was at a Sunstone conference just recently. Sunstone is the Sunstone Foundation is a group of, well, I guess, what would you
say?
Liberal Mormons, you know. They love to talk about Mormonism, but they don't have the guts to leave, I guess, you know, or some of them have been excommunicated. And I was actually in a panel discussion, and some of the people on the panel had all of them had been excommunicated. And one of the questions they raised, which I thought was interesting, was, well, why did we get excommunicated? Why doesn't the church excommunicate Glenn Beck? That was brought up, and a lot of people were actually cheering that comment.
Well, what you know? Did Glenn Beck do?
To warrant being, well, see, that would be a good question. I mean, is Glenn Beck guilty of just being a conservative? Because here's what's interesting. These people are all liberal politically. And what's interesting about liberals is they have about as much tolerance for another point of view, you know, that, you know, forget it. I mean, and these people, it's really kind of odd because they obviously had no real discernment as they were Mormons, and now that they've been kicked out, they obviously show they still don't have a whole lot of discernment, and they have a lot of arrogance that they just haven't gotten rid of, and that's sad. And here they're making these derogatory things about Beck, but yet what is Beck's real crime? He holds to a very conservative viewpoint, but as far as we know, and again, I'm even admitting, they weren't criticizing his view of salvation. In fact, I listened to one of the speakers in a workshop prior, and she sounded sometimes somewhat orthodox in her view of salvation, though she was very mixed up. It was kind of like reading the Book of Mormon. I often tell people when I read the Book of Mormon, I don't get the impression I'm reading about ancient Mormons. They sound more like confused Protestants, the way the theology is explained in the Book of Mormon. And she sounded just like that. But obviously they weren't criticizing Beck for his view of salvation that I read to you earlier. They were more, you know, upset with him because of his conservative politics. Right. And that's just the way a lot of liberals are. I mean,
okay, so what else has Beck said? Anything, I mean, that's a serious quote that you said. I mean, that does sound evangelical, and you need to ferret out really what he means by some of the things. But
well, let me go on to say that he said this. He said salvation is an individual relationship between the individual and God through the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross.
Doesn't sound like Mormon soteriology, universal resurrection.
He's not mentioning a garden at all. Jesus said, John 14:6, I am the way, the truth, and the life. I cannot be saved for you. I cannot save you. I can't even save myself. If you're a Christian, you believe that Jesus can save you. Now, again, this is not really the type of language that I'm used to hearing from Mormons, because salvation in Mormonism is always all about the church. Salvation is in the church and of the church. I mean, Mark Peterson, a Mormon apostle, actually said that in a message that he gave. Salvation is all about the church. Now, again, Beck is sounding very inclusive, and he sounds inclusive to the point where it starts to make me nervous, because when he talks about believing in God, he never really gives some criteria for what that God is like.
Right.
And of course, I'm not going to join spiritual hands with a Muslim because I don't believe Allah is the true God. I'm certainly not going to join hands with a Buddhist because Buddhism, for the most part, is atheistic. So obviously, what are we talking about here? Let's all get back to being religious nice guys. Well, even C.S. Lewis said that's not what we're looking for, because if everybody was nice, they'd still be, you know, on their way to damnation. And that's not what we as Christians want. We want to see salvation in the lives of these people. So one of the statements he said. He also said he went to, he has these chalkboards, and he goes up to these chalkboards, and he's writing all over the chalkboards. So he goes up to the chalkboard in this one show on July 13th, and he says, here is traditional Christianity, and he has a picture, he says, of a cross, three crosses on a hill. He says, Jesus died, two thieves over here. He took on the sins of the world by choice. The empty tomb represents that he conquered death. He was not a victim because he did it by choice. Now, again, remember, the context is talking about black liberation theology. So what he's trying to do is show a difference between where the black liberation theology is and where he thinks Christianity is. So he says, the empty tomb represents that he conquered death. He was not a victim because he did it by choice. He is not a victim. He's a victor. He was a conqueror. He conquered death. Got it? To receive his salvation, you accept his forgiveness of sin and live your life according to his will. That's what every Christian church in the country and the world believes. This is biblical. Now, here's what's interesting, though. He says, to receive his salvation, you accept his forgiveness of sins. I have talked to literally thousands of Mormons over the past 3 decades, and one of the questions I like to ask them is, do you have the assurance that all your sins are forgiven? If you were to die right now, do you have the assurance you would get the best the Mormon religion has for you? Mormons normally will not answer yes to that question. I asked it of a Mormon just last night on the MRM Facebook page, and I asked him that. I said, do you have the assurance all your sins are forgiven? Yes, he said. If I keep the commandments and I repent, etc. And I wrote back, if, that doesn't sound real sure to me, you know, because obviously, as I ask more questions, I don't think he is keeping all the commandments, and I don't think he's totally repented according to the Mormon definition. Therein lies the problem. Now, if Beck believes that he has the forgiveness of sins right now, that would certainly separate him from a lot of professing Latter-day Saints. Now, could he be mixed up on a lot of these things? Yeah, Luther was. I mean, a lot of people criticize Luther because Luther was inconsistent on a lot of things. But he's like, you know, he's moving out in this area. This is pretty much untapped ground at this point in history. Right. And we can understand why there's going to be some inconsistency there. And I'd like to give him a little bit of a leash here, you know, and try to be understanding, because I think we would all agree in this room that our theology, when we first became Christians, we probably had a lot of ideas that we would probably be very embarrassed about now looking back. Because we just didn't know. We didn't understand. Right. There were a lot of things we weren't real clear on, that as we grow in the Lord and grow in the knowledge of his word, we go back and go, oh, wow, gee, wow, that makes sense, you know? And we kind of cast aside some of those old things that we thought might have been true in the beginning because we were ignorant, you know?
You guys are?
Okay.
Hey, folks, you're listening to Faith and Reason Radio. I'm your host, Matt Slick. We have in the studio with us Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson, both from MRM.org, Mormonism Research Ministry. Tomorrow night, we're going to be at the New Heart Community Fellowship Church, or just New Heart Church for short, off of Exit 36 in Nampa. So if you want to get out there tomorrow night at 7 p.m., they'll be there just answering questions. And today is the 24th of August, so that means on the 25th of August, 2010, for the podcasters who might be getting this later, that's when it'll be. And you guys are always good at stuff. Okay, now, so we talked, once every couple of weeks or so, I guess, and you've been mentioning more and more that Glenn Beck's been talking more and more about the Lord, about God, about stuff.
About God, yeah. He makes a big issue about that.
And what do you think that is?
Well, I think Beck sees that our country has gotten away from those principles that, have kind of been the glue to hold this country together.
Well, the Constitutional Fathers said that this is our Constitution would only work in a Christian society. It actually said that.
Yeah. And you know what's really sad is you notice just how there isn't a lot of mercy anymore in our culture. If somebody makes a mistake, you know, we come down really heavy on them. There isn't a lot of understanding anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, I look at cases like, Let's say a tragic situation where a parent, you know, just makes a horrible mistake, and let's say because of that mistake, the child, their son or daughter, is hurt very seriously, or maybe even dies. Mm-hmm. I mean, we would understand this poor parent is probably going through a literal hell over that, and that what does our unfeeling, you know, society want to do? Punish them all the more. Mm-hmm. And when really what happened was certainly a bad mistake, but was it criminal? Right. Was it really criminal? And I think before, when we held more to the Judeo-Christian ethics that made this country really great, we would understand that, and courts would be more understanding, but it seems like a lot of that is lost now, and now it seems like the mercy is given to the ones that are the criminals, where they shouldn't be getting the mercy.
Right.
You know, it should come down hard on them because they meant to do what they were doing. And so as a nation, getting away from our Christian roots, we're pretty screwed up. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the church, the Christian church, resembles too much of that. And let's be serious. We have a lot of Christian churches where if you were to take aside a lot of the people in those churches and have them define their faith, they would probably do it very badly.
Well, you know, back in college in Southern California, now this is not a rip on Calvary Chapel, but at Big Calvary, where Chuck Smith himself was a teacher, there was a Wednesday night or it was a Tuesday night Bible study, and I wanted to do a project. And I had a theory. I went to a Christian college, a Lutheran college around the corner, and I had a theory about evangelism, knowledge, doctrine, and things like this. Turned out my theory was wrong. But, hey, it got an A because you learn. That's what the whole idea of social work and studies was. And what I did was I went in there. I had a questionnaire for the people in this. And there's 200 people in this Bible study. They've been going for a while. And I asked certain questions. To my utter surprise, 80% of them were functioning Roman Catholics in their understanding of the doctrine of salvation. Mm-hmm. And I showed that, my results, to the Bible study leader. He dropped his jaw. Mm-hmm. Could not believe it. He was shocked.
Well, I would say that's probably going to be true in a lot of churches because these things are not emphasized. And one thing I have a lot of pastor friends that are Calvary Chapel, very well respected, I think they're trying to, get away from that and trying very hard to produce a church that is grounded. And I commend them for that.
Now, look at our church today. I mean, the Christian church, everybody is tickling ears in many ways. I mean, they're giving great advice sermons. They're giving
6-point sermons on how to have your hair look better.
Yeah, I mean these different things. And I don't want to be too overly critical, but at the same time, I think you're right. Probably the typical church, many people don't know what makes them uniquely Christian. And so when the Mormons come knock on their door, when the Jehovah's Witnesses come, and when they get in these conversations, they don't even know what they believe. Not only can they not be a good witness to the people at the door, they end up converting themselves. And this is a real shame. It's the job of the church, if we're going to be the shepherd, to be able to instruct properly and to teach God's word in a godly manner. The essential issues are huge. And if somebody can't define basic definitions of who God is, who Jesus is, how we receive salvation, where our authority comes from, if they don't have basic knowledge, they're going to be fodder for. Well, I taught high school for 17 years, and I taught Bible. And I told the juniors that in a couple of years you're going to become just the clay of these professors. And it's true, because 70% of all Christian high school graduates within a few years have left the faith. Mm-hmm. They're no longer practicing it. Why is that? Mm-hmm. That's because we're not grounding them in the church, in the home, and getting them to a place where they can own their own faith. They have borrowed their parents' faith, and it's a tragedy. And we're losing too many people that way. And it's not. If this thing is true, then we shouldn't be having that happen.
Now, folks, I did not put Eric up to saying this at all. We didn't talk about this at all. This is completely spontaneous on his own. I've said almost the exact same thing numerous times. Church is in trouble.
I mean, I just got that from you. I just compiled it all the years of listening to Matt. That's true.
You know, on that subject, though, and I think if you're a parent out there that has high school age kids that are getting ready to go to college, you better be scared to death if you're concerned about your kids' spirituality, because I just forwarded you that article just recently. I can't remember where it was first published, but it actually talked about professors, and their primary goal is not so much to teach the class they're paid to teach. They're there to convince your kids to abandon their Christianity. They are looking at your kids as being potential victims. Oh, yeah. I could send it to you.
I need to have that.
Yeah. It's a great article.
Just yesterday, my daughter, first day of college at Grossmont College in San Diego in El Cajon, and she had several classes. Well, the one class was English 120. It's a basic English composition class. And the professor gets up there and says, this class will be about environmentalism. And he says, you can agree to disagree with me, but you better bring in the evidence. And all the books they have are going to be
English.
English, and it's going to be all on having to do with environmental issues and global warming. And he says there's a lot of right-wing nuts out there on the radio that will tell you differently, but I'm going to teach you the truth. So my daughter called me and said, what am I going to do with this, Dad? I said, I tell you what, if you want, you can stay in there, because there was no other options for her. She has to have this class. And so she's going to stay in there, and we're going to work through this together. It's a teachable moment for me to work with my daughter,
Absolutely.
Who's gone through Christian schools all her life, and she knows what's right, but she says, should I even take this class? I said, okay, well, you may cost your grade on this, but I think we're going to work through this.
Yeah, I've got some stories about college. Same kind of thing. My grade would never quite measure up to those people around me who didn't know as much, didn't do as well, but were also a lot quieter than I was in class. Mm. But hey, you know, teachers are really objective.
It would have been fun having you in class.
I got stories. I've embarrassed teachers politely to raise my hand and ask them very difficult questions.
Well, let's be serious. A lot of these professors, they don't want to be challenged.
No.
And they don't like to be challenged.
Mm. Nope.
And so it is a risk for a Christian student to raise their hand. But I'll tell you, I got to hand it to Eric when he was teaching Apologetics Bible in high school level. I used to sub at that same school, and I used to think, you know, these kids don't know it, but they're getting seminary level stuff here, mm-hmm. you know, and they don't realize it. You don't tell kids that, because, But anyway, Eric tells the stories of a lot of his students that went to college and came back to thank him for that, because of that education, they were willing to stand their ground. But let's be serious. Most of our youth groups in our churches, what is it? All fun and games. Mm-hmm. I feel so bad for these kids that once they get out of high school and they go into college, they are going to be dead meat. And, boy, if you're a youth pastor out there, shame on you if that's your curriculum, just playing fun and games. Because, man, that wouldn't set with me at all. And, man, you got to get these kids into the Word. You got to get them prepared because they're going out into a real world out there.
Very hostile.
And that world is very hostile. Very hostile indeed.
Well, you know, we only got a couple minutes left in the show, but I just want to put a plug in. I'm actually working, and I put it on pause. I'll have to show you guys when I get back to my place tonight. But I'm working on something for mom and dad to teach their 2.3 children how to know and understand the faith, logic, evidences, and things like that at the dinner table for years, you know, as it goes through different levels and things like that. We also need coursework. We need things that teach the parents because I've heard 80% and even 90% statistics from Barna of the children raised in a Christian home who go to a Christian church and regular secular school, but they go to a secular college, they lose their faith within 2 years. And I was asked to go to BSU a few times to speak to the philosophy class. And I remember one time I said something on purpose. I wanted to see the reaction. And, you know, I was defending the existence of God. This professor asked me to come in and give arguments for God's existence. And I forgot exactly what it was I said, but it was one of those things about Jesus is the only way. And I basically said it and watched the eyebrows and watched the eyes of people roll their eyes and slump their shoulders like I was a moron. And I turned back to the class, and I addressed that very issue. I said, you guys are being brainwashed. And I haven't been asked back to the class. But, you know, that's the way it goes. But we have to become very, very strong in our faith. We have to become very good. And our children need to know it. Right. Few people know the faith like we three in the room do. I'm not trying to boast, not trying to brag. But when you study the cults, you study your own theology because you have to
Absolutely.
Do that.
Absolutely.
That's right.
You're right.
Hey, you know, we have a minute left in the show. The music's going to be starting here in a minute. And tomorrow night, folks, Bill and Eric will be in the studio again tomorrow night. Don't know what we're going to talk about tomorrow, but, you know, more of the same.
Well, maybe what we could talk about is we've kind of talked about what Glenn Beck believes, but let's talk about how that contradicts what the Mormon church leaders are
that'll
teaching.
That'll be good.
And
we'll do that tomorrow night.
Yeah, maybe we could do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then after the show, we're going to go to New Heart Church in Nampa, and you guys are going to just take the floor and just fire a question, maybe get people primed up and started. It's a good group. 20, 30, 40 people will show. And we'll do that. That'll be tomorrow night, folks, at 7 p.m. on Wednesday, on the 25th here of August. And that's at 7 p.m. off of Exit 36, three-quarters of a mile north of the freeway in Nampa. Hey, guys, thanks for coming in.
Hey, thank you for having us.
God bless. We'll see you. Bye, everybody.
Been Faith and Reason with Matt Slick. For more, go to carm.org. That's carm.org.